Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
All right.
Welcome to this Social Suplex special on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. I'm your host, Danny Kukler, and I have a great, great guest for you guys today. I have the author of Way of the Blade, 100 of the greatest bloody matches of all time, and he's one of the DVDVR originals. I always mix it up. Always mix up the letters of those.
Yeah, I do too. And it's a, you know, something I started basically, you know, whatever, 20 years ago.
Yeah, one of the original internet wrestling fans. Can we just say that?
I mean, I guess it's not entirely inaccurate. Sure. I mean, I was selling mixed videotapes. Of taped Japanese wrestling I got from my from a Japanese video store in Hayward, California near my parents' house when I was a senior in high school on RSPW in like 1992. So I guess that makes me about as original. I mean, I think there were people who are on Prodigy boards before I was on Prodigy boards.
Right.
So I think that there was like a micro generation before my generation, guys like Bob Ryder and guys like that. Who I think
Bob Barnett.
Yeah, Bob Barnett, sure. Those guys.
But you're as OG can get.
Yeah.
Joe Schneider, great author. The book is fantastic. I'm on Bruno Sammartino and Tito Santana versus Adrian Adonis and Randy Savage, but I have the chapters open, and we're gonna talk about some of these bloody matches today and how he got into the wrestling industry and all that good stuff today. How you doing, Phil?
I'm doing good. Doing good. Glad to be here. Appreciate you having me on.
I appreciate you coming on and after your great appearance on Between the Sheets, of course.
Sure. Yeah, I've been hitting the and then I don't know if you've been listening. In addition to the book Way of the Blade, which is available on Amazon. I've launched the Way of the Blade the podcast, which I've got. I've already there will be 4 out by the time this gets released. 4 episodes. I've got one with my friend Eric Rich from Segunda Kaida talking about killer Carl Cox versus Dick Murdoch. I've got one with Daniel Makabe, who's a tremendous professional wrestler of his own, talking about Daisuke Ikeda versus Yuki Ishikawa from Futen. Then I've got a 2-parter on NWA, the NWA Anarchy War Games matches. So the 2000, which I don't know, those are probably not matches that very many people have seen, but are truly incredible matches. I've got the first one with Reverend Dan Wilson, the leader of the Devil's Rejects. And then the second one, which I'm going to finish editing tonight and put out, will be out Thursday. So I'm sure by the time that this gets released, with Reverend Dan Wilson and Jeff G. Bailey about the Devil's, the heel versus heel war games, Devil's Rejects versus NWA Elite, which is an amazing match and a really great podcast. I mean, those guys have so many insane stories about like that era of Cornelia. It's a very niche thing with the era of Cornelia, Georgia independent wrestling, which is one of the coolest things ever. And I've got
that sounds fantastic.
I've got an, enormous guest, which I won't say who it is, but I've got an enormous guest lined up for my next one after that. One of the biggest people in the current professional wrestling industry. So that's rolling too. The book's rolling. It's going well. It's selling well. I just signed the contract for book number two. So I'm keeping this whole thing rolling.
Yeah. You are a fantastic author. This is a fantastic book. I suggest any pro wrestling fan read it. How did you sort of swirl this thing into to book form?
Well, you know, I've been writing, you know, reviewing and writing about wrestling pretty consistently for, you know, over 20 years now, significantly, almost 25 years. And I don't know, Segunda Caído, which is the blog that I run with my buddy Eric, and so we have some other people that write for it. We put out something new every week, every day. So every day we've got a new review of some different obscure corner of the wrestling world. This weird indie show, this Met Lucha show in front of 25 people, this match from France in 1964, or whatever. We put out something new every day. And you know, the publisher of this book, John Snowden, who wrote a Shamrock biography, which is amazing. He self-published, and he's written some books for other public houses, and he decided to self-publish the Shamrock book and had some success with that and kind of wanted to sort of branch out a little bit. So I kind of just pitched him an idea. I thought it would be cool, you know, since I've been writing about this, you know, on the internet for so long, it's like I've got a style that it's relatively well-developed at this point, and I've certainly, you know, done a ton of different reviews of a whole bunch of different things. And I thought the kind of idea behind the bloody wrestling is it would be a kind of a nice opportunity to sort of talk about a whole bunch of different things. So, I mean, you've got the book and, you know, it's wrestling from all over the world, all different time periods, you know, territories. It gives me a sort of a chance to talk about all that stuff. Right. I've got some things I want to say about UWF wrestling in Japan. I can write about that. I wrote about All Japan. I wrote about Lucha. I wrote about independent wrestling. I mean, there's a WrestleMania match in there, and then there's matches that are in front of like 25 people. And it kind of, you know, which has always been that's always been kind of the thing that I've done for years in Segunda Caída and other places is, you know, I'm not necessarily somebody who's going to review Raw, you know, or review a Dynamite or a New Japan Dome show, current New Japan show. That's not the thing I do. I'm the guy who digs in the crates. I'm the guy who's in the weeds, and I'm saying, you know, everybody likes this Okada match, but you know, it was really good. This match with Mickey Knuckles in it from a couple weeks ago in a garage somewhere in Indiana, or you know, like that's the thing I do is I get in there and I, you know, everybody's got an opinion on Roman Reigns. I don't really have a particularly large opinion on him. I'm going to tell you, I'm going to get a little deeper. I'm going to get a little more of the weeds. I find that stuff more fun, you know, showing people stuff that they may not have heard of, or not have seen. And, you know, obviously the book, you know, I talk about a bunch of the canonical stuff. You know, I write about Hart Austin. I write about Magnum TA, Tully. You know, there is the stuff in there that would be, you know, Last Battle of Atlanta would be in there in any sort of book about something like this. But, you know, it's alongside El Pollo versus Commando Negro. You know,
right. It's alongside MS1 versus Sangre Chicana.
Well, MS1 Sangre Chicana is the greatest professional wrestling match of all time. So that's got to be in any book like that. El Pollo Commando Negro is a match where a guy's dressed like in a chicken suit and he bleeds all over. That may not be the greatest match of all time, but you know, maybe it is. Right? Maybe that's the coolest thing you've ever seen. So so that's kind of my idea behind it, was I was gonna give an opportunity to do different things.
Yeah, and your book really runs the gamut on every style of wrestling. In every sort of gamut of wrestling in the world, it starts off with French Catch, which is a recent discovery in the footage realm. How did people find that? And it's ridiculous.
So you know, I'm keeping some of the details of how we got our hands on that a little to myself, because it was a little bit. Basically, we kind of found out how we could get it. And we found out a way to get it. and we got it. And so it's like a little bit like, so it's not, you know, so we're going to keep it a little between me, you, and the wall on exactly the specific details about how it goes. But basically what we did was we got our hands on, you know, some people I was working with, the guys in Segunda Cayena, got our hands on French, the almost entire archive of French professional wrestling. We're talking about 200, 300 matches from, you know, 1950, all the way through the early 80s. And this is basically all stuff, virtually all of it, new to anybody who wasn't French in 1962, right? Like the people who watched on television in Nice in 1962 saw it. But outside of that, nobody's really seen any of this stuff. So what we've been doing over the last, you know, maybe about the last year or so, a little more than that, is every Tuesday on the blog, we review a couple of new matches, usually two. Sometimes there are two television shows, basically. Sometimes the show is just one match. Sometimes it's a couple matches. We review two shows. We put them up on YouTube for everybody to see them. And it's always a completely, you know, virtually completely new. I think maybe there were 10 matches that were on YouTube of all this stuff beforehand. So, you know, one YouTube page had it. So there was a couple stuff. So it was like enough to know that it was really good. But now it's like we get a real sense of all of it. And, you know, some of the stuff is a lot. I think a fair amount of that stuff is as good as any wrestling anywhere.
And it's ahead of its time. It's really ahead of its time, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's the first time I ever saw any of it. I saw Gilbert Seska versus Billy Contanzaro. And it was something I found on Daily Motion. Sometimes I'm like bored, like, it, you know, doing some work or something, I'll just fuck around on YouTube and look for hard to find wrestling matches on it. It's sort of like a, almost like a time, you know, like you're doing something else, your kids are watching Paw Patrol, and you're just like, all right, let me go see if I can find something. So I found this random match on Daily Motion, Billy Contanzaro versus Gilbert Seska. And when you watch it, it's like the athleticism and speed of, you know, like a PWG match in 2014. It's like 1958. And you're like, well, it doesn't make any, doesn't, it completely for it. It's like seeing an eight, something like it was aliens, right? What you thought always had the impression wrestling from the 50s and 60s. So that's some of it. But I mean, the cool thing about French Catch, and this is going a little off topic, but there's a match in there in my book, so it kind of counts, is that it's not all that, right? So there's that, but there's also like, you know, really, really, really stiff brawls. And there's really like really elaborate sort of character stuff, Quasimodo and Spartacus, and just all of these like very out there. I mean, the match in the book is Dr. Adolf Kaiser, who is a German psychoanalyst, like a guy who's basically playing a Nazi in 1957 France. And 1957 France playing a Nazi, that's like in that audience, there are people whose family were killed by the Nazis. That is not distant history. That's like recent
9/11 territory.
Yeah, it'd be like doing a 9/11 terrorist character in a New York Indian, like, you know, February 2002. I actually did see, I went to a JPW show once in around in like 2002. Where there was a guy, Fat Frank, who was the JAPW promoter.
Oh, yeah, Fat Frank, legendary figure.
Was wrestling a guy who was working the Sheik and the final, and he, like right after 9/11. I think the end of the match was he threw powdered anthrax in Fat Frank's face.
Oh, no.
They're like, it's anthrax. Like, oh, my God. That was like, you know, Bayonne, New Jersey, right? That was right outside the, you know, you could see the husks of the Twin Towers from the arena. So, yeah. So a little like that. So it's like, so back then, it was like, so the cool thing about it, especially which you don't necessarily see if you're seeing kind of a random couple matches here or there, which show up on YouTube. When you watch all of it, like we watch, you really get to see the sense of, you know, evolution and different styles and different really great wrestlers. I mean, there's a guy, Le Petit Prince. I don't know if he's named after the children's book or the children's book was named after him, but Le Petit Prince, who is basically 1960s Rey Mysterio Jr. Like has like 1994 Rey speed and moveset. It's like unbelievable. Like you don't even know what you're watching. It's like somebody transported Ray Jr. Not like current awesome Ray Jr. with bad knees. I'm talking about like Ray Jr. from like 1994, 95 Ray Jr. in France. So it's very cool. It's like, it's, you know, as a guy who kind of likes, let, you know, one of the things I like the most is finding new shit. It's like, it really was Christmas when we were able to get our hands on all this stuff.
So if
you're interested, segundakaida@blogspot.com. Segundakaida.blogspot.com. Every Tuesday we put up new shit.
You've convinced me now. The new Holy Grail, though, is the Killer Card Cox, Dick Murdoch blindfold match.
Right.
Yeah, that is the new Holy Grail. And I want to see it. And there's, these two guys will beat the living crap out of each other. And it's blindfolded. So they'll have no idea they're beating the crap out of each other.
Yeah. And you just know that's just sitting somewhere in a box in Stamford, Connecticut. Uncatalogued.
Good God. Some of these matches I was reading about, like the Jerry Lawler and Dutch Mantel, which I've seen actually, because I do a podcast called Great Match Generator, where I actually watch some of these great matches and actually review them with Matt from Markout Mountain. We actually watch like four great matches from the Greatest Match Ever project. And that Jerry Lawler Dutch Mantel match is so good.
Yeah.
You know?
It's cool. It's a barbed wire match, but it's not like
it's not like a barbed wire match. It's like a boxing match.
Right. So it's not built around bumps as much as it's built around, like, you know, what it does is it limits the geography of the ring.
Yeah.
In kind of interesting ways. So it doesn't allow
like a cage match.
Yeah, it's more like a cage match. And so it doesn't really, can't do a lot of rope running. So it tightens the ring and it a fair amount about what they can do, because even you can see a lot of the matches, those guys like you're very, very wary about going backwards and being pushed into the barbed wire. Like basically, like if you were actually having a wrestling match in barbed wire and real, it's like the only thing you'd be trying to do is get poked by the barbed wire. So what it does is it kind of makes it like it's like a fist fight in a phone booth, because the geography of the match is so limited. These guys basically just tee off on each other. Yeah, it's great. It's funny, you know, it's like I probably have used, you know, when you write as many things as I've written over the years, it's like you sort of repeat the same tropes over and over again. And I've probably used Lawler, Mantel, fist fight as an adjective to describe punching great punches in wrestling matches probably 100 times. Like, oh, this was all, wasn't exact, wasn't as good as Lawler Mantel, but it had a Lawler Mantel-ish kind of thing. So yeah, it's like one of the things I was rewatching like that match. Yeah, I was rewatching that match for the book. It was just like, oh yeah, this is what I was talking about. These two guys.
What was the most surprising match you rewatched and you thought, man, I was not expecting this to be good, but it was really good.
Well, you know, I had an idea, you know, I put the list together. So I had an idea of, you know, what I knew was great and what wasn't. I'm trying to think of, Magnum TA Tully Blanchard was a match obviously with an incredible reputation. And certainly something I'd probably seen a half dozen times before, but something I had not seen in a long time when I rewatched it. So it was something that kind of was on the list just because, you know, of course it's going to be on the list. But that was something that, you know, it really blew me away when I watched it again. I was like, God, this is good. And it's like, and it's such like a, you know, it's such a like Magnum TA is sort of this really virtuous figure in 80s wrestling. I imagine I'm a little older than you. And that period.
Yeah, I'm 25.
So I'm a lot older than you. So that period was a period that I grew up watching, you know, TBS, WTBS wrestling, you know, was what was the wrestling that I watched as a kid. You know, I grew up in California, not in the South. So I didn't go to shows, but, you know, I had cable. So I watched, you know, was watching, you know, TA was this figure, like of this virtuous figure. And it was like watching this, you know, almost like watching somebody descend into hell. It was like watching Death Wish or something like that, one of those movies where, you know, Charles Bronson's whole family gets killed and he goes around just murdering people, and watching Magnum TA in that match was like, that was like, but, you know, watching this guy lose his soul to try to kill Tully Blanchard, to jab a wooden stick in his eye, and like it was really harrowing in a lot of ways that I did not remember that, you know, when I watched it on a videotape from like the not Blockbuster video, because Blockbuster video didn't have the good wrestling videos. You had to go to like the, you know, just like the local owned video store somewhere, find where they had the good wrestling games. When I watched it then for the first time, I didn't don't think it affected me in the way it watching it again. Or right. I mean, this is
because you had the context now,
or just, you know, it's just like, you know, the idea of you know who Magnum was, what he represented, and what this was. And you know, like, I got so many. It's like one of the worst things about current wrestling, I think is this sort of every match has of this overly emotional story, or Johnny Gargano stares at his hands and goes, "What kind of monster have I become?" You know, that kind of shit. It's awful. And you know, like, this was that story, but actually, like, not with that kind of overwrought, you know,
melodrama. Like,
yeah. But just like, this was what was going on here. This was Magnum TA becoming a monster, but he wasn't, you know, he wasn't looking at his hands with terror or whatever that shit that that NXT show what was going on here.
Right. And a match I'm glad you put on there, a match that I love dearly, is the Hell in a Cell with Taker Brock.
Yeah. That was something I hadn't watched in a long time.
Wow. That match. It's my favorite Hell in a Cell of time.
Yeah, I think it's the best. It's the best one.
It's the best one. Thank you.
Well, it doesn't have the bumps, right? But you know,
but it has the brutality.
Yeah. I mean, it's gross. And I'm not like a Taker guy particularly. He's not somebody who means a lot to wrestling fans of a different generation than me. He's not somebody who means a ton to me. It's fine. But I mean, this I think was his like masterful, his masterpiece, was the best match he's ever been in. And Brock at that point was just like, you know, nobody's ever reached that level in that first year. Just a phenomenon.
Yeah.
His stuff is, I mean, I still really enjoy him, but he's at a different point, right? His stuff is, this was when he was coming in, it was like you'd never seen anything like this. He was just ripping through everybody. And, you know, this is him just tearing the top of the Undertaker's head off. You know, like, and yeah, that match is great. And yeah, I think it doesn't have the moment of like the Foley match or the Shawn Michaels match.
But it personifies what Hell in a Cell should be.
Yeah, it's a cage match. It's a brutal cage match.
Cage match with a lot of brutality, blood squirting everywhere.
Everywhere.
This is what I want in wrestling.
Heyman does a really gross blade job in it. It's just like,
Heyman does a gross blade job in it too. Yeah, I remember that.
That match is, that was that weird period of the WWF where they just went like all in on it. It's like every other show is just going to be like, the ring is going to be soaked. Yeah. It was kind of a strange thing after. Yeah. I mean, because that was around the same time as you had that Cena JBL match, which is in my book, but could have been. And then, you know, Eddie JBL, which is in the book. And
that Cena JBL match. I watched that a couple of days ago. Oh, that was blood soaked.
Yeah, if this was the bloodiest matches rather than 100 of the greatest bloody matches, like a different thing, right? That definitely would have made it.
And it's so hokey with JBL saying, "I win," and then just throwing the truck thing anyway. I felt so robbed as a wrestling fan watching that again. But the match was very good. It was just. At the end, the ending just robbed
him. There's other, you know, there's matches in this book with really terrible endings, but a lot of times when you just completely blow it like that, in a match, it's just like, I don't want to spend 10 minutes talking about how shitty the finish was. Like, I'd rather write about something else. I mean, one of the things that I think has changed, is different about me as somebody who's doing this a little, you know, older, is I'm much, much less interested in watching things that I don't like.
Yeah.
You know, it's like there's a point where, you know, a lot of people, you know, they're like, "Oh man, I can't wait to watch this so I can shit all over it." And it's like, "Yeah, I don't have enough free time for that." Yeah,
I haven't gotten to that point. And it
happens. Yeah, it happens. Everybody. Yeah, it's, you know, it's when you're younger. You know, like If you go back and I don't even know if this stuff is even online, there are Thunder work rate reports where I'm just ripping the shit out of WCW booking in the 90s, making all kinds of jokes. I mean, I was like, that was the kind of stuff I used to do. It's just like, now it's like, I got kids, I got a regular job, I got a wife, I got books I want to read. I don't have the energy to like watch a WWE pay-per-view so I can like crap on it for on the internet. So a lot of the times with like even with this book is like there was famous matches. It was like where I was like, I don't really remember liking that very much, so I'm not gonna bother writing it up, even though I might have some interesting things to say about it. And I probably not, the book isn't 100% free of shit talking, but it's probably 90% free of shit talking. For the most part, I try to keep it pretty. I'm much more interested in finding some cool shit and telling you about some bullshit than I am about making jokes. But it's not like you can shit on Raw more than you could shit on Russo booked Raw. I mean, that was when I was in the mines back when Russo was booking Raw. And I mean, nothing is going to be as bad as that. I mean, you guys talk about Alexis, but no, sure? I'm telling you, you weren't there. Nothing's worse than that. Nothing's worse than Russo Nitro.
Are you not sure? Even... Alexa Bliss is doing her damn.
Oh, yeah, but that's 8 minutes at the end of a show. Nothing. No, I would tell you to go back and rewatch that shit, but you should not. It is horrible.
No, I'm not going to rewatch that shit.
To be fair, Danny, I haven't watched a single second of Alexa. I mean, maybe a single second of Alexa Bliss. Did she have a match against Ronda? I may have watched that. But as far as the amount of Alexa Bliss I've watched in my life.
No, I mean Fiend Alexa Bliss.
I know what you're saying, but I haven't watched. Like, I think I watched.
I only watched the clips.
Okay, because it's at that point, it's like I got. There's going to be somebody doing some analysis of the Sun spread prick and roll before the playoff game. I'll read that. But did she have a match against Ronda? I watched all the Ronda matches. Alexa Bliss have a match against Ronda, so I've watched one Alexa Bliss match in my life, and I'll be happy to continue to be one forever. I may have watched against The Rock's cousin. Eric, who is my partner in crime on Segunda Cayeta, we have one of the things we do is an ongoing 2020 ongoing match of the year list. We've been doing it for the last 5 or 6 years. Yeah. So he'll watch more of this stuff than I will. So every once in a while, he'll like nominate like a match on Raw or a match for WWE pay per view, and eventually I'll get around to checking it out if he's nominated. So every once in a while, he'll say, "Oh no, this was really good," and I'll like go, "I fucking fine, I'll watch a Drew McIntyre match, I guess."
Drew McIntyre's fine, but
I'm sure not my taste. I think I saw him live at Evolve once in Baltimore. I thought he was okay.
Yeah.
He's a fine guy that was the seventh best guy at an Evolve show I went to 5 years ago. You know, it's like, oh, yeah, that's no shame in being the seventh best guy at a 2014 Evolve show.
No, there's no shame. No shame.
Some good wrestler. He was better than Chuck Taylor. Not as good as Leo Rush. This was around the level he was at the Baltimore ROH show.
Not enough to be a top guy.
Or fine. He's tall. I don't know. I'm pretty removed from it, which is a happy place to be.
That's the thing. Let's talk about some more bloody wrestling. That Kevin Nash McCrowley.
Yes.
I haven't seen that match in a podcast. Should I watch it? Yes,
it's great. And I did. This is I'll give credit to my buddy Eric for this, because I think he was the one who found this. Or somebody recommended it to him or something. And he was like, "Phil, you gotta watch this Mick Foley Nash match from TNA." I was like, "No, I don't." And he's like, "No, you really need to watch it." And no, it's great. It's really great. It's easily Kevin. It's the Brett match from Survivor Series, which is actually live. It was really good too. But easily a top two or three Nash match ever. And right up there with, Foley's had a great career, but this was well past the point you thought he was ever going to do anything good. This was years past the point he retired in WWE. Yeah, it's got a terrible ending, which is, a TNA specialty, right? But the actual meat of the match is really great. And it's kind of this cool story of like Foley being this guy who resents Nash for you know, half-assing his way through his wrestling career, and Nash being a guy who thinks Foley's a sucker for taking this, these stupid beatings, you know, and Nash is like, you know, we have, I got more money than you, and I didn't have to destroy my life. So it's kind of an interesting, like, that was the story behind the match, basically. Was nice, and the match itself was really good, and it was a little like, I don't know, like a, you know, like a little like Vader Foley. I mean, that was the match that it reminded me the most of, where it's like Foley's taking this like really, really, really stiff beating and then, you know, firing back, and then both guys start bleeding. And then, I mean, they finish it like a run in with Tracy Brooks or something. The finish was awful, but the actual stuff leading up, the actual match itself was really, really good, and in a way that, like, a perfect thing for this book, where I was like, anybody remember this Mick Foley, Kevin Nash match from TNA 13 years ago? Probably not. But it's awesome. Everybody should go check it out. And I'm not a guy who's necessarily, you know, like I said, I don't know if that may be the only TNA match on this in the book. That's a blind spot for me. I had one of the guys I used to fight when I used to box was a cable guy, and he got like back in the last, you know, days you could get like stolen cable. He got me like a stolen cable box, and I watched all the first, you know, 2 months of TNA pay-per-views for free on my buddy's stolen cable box before that. But that was pretty much it. Like, I remember a fair amount about like the first 6 weeks of TNA. It's like, I remember they brought in Wolfie D from PG-13 working like a goth gimmick, and that was kind of cool. And but outside of that, I was like, and as soon as they stopped running the Nashville Asylum, I was pretty much out and remained out for the entire remaining run of the whole promotion. But
yeah,
had a fun Ken Shamrock match on like the third show, I think I remember vaguely.
Headhunter A versus Headhunter B. I didn't even know this match happened.
Yeah, no, okay, this was a kind of a. I mean, this is a generation.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
This is like that IWA, 90s IWA deathmatch.
Oh, yeah, the deathmatch promotion.
Yeah, it was a big, like, early tape trader thing. Like, you'd always get the, if like, people started trading tapes, they'd always get a wing tape, or they would always get, like, an IWA King of the Deathmatches. Because it was the shit.
I knew of IWA King of the Deathmatches because I knew of that tournament.
Right.
So that would always, I didn't be know, like, the head on his face still off.
What? Yeah, the only time they ever did, right? And it's a crazy match. Because the headhunter is just such a weird thing. Like, they're like, you know, like, I think I remember writing a book, it's like more like a thing some kid would make up in their bedroom. Like, I'm going to, if they're like making up wrestlers playing with wrestling buddies, and one of them, it's like they're identical twins. They look just like Abdullah the Butcher, and they do moonsaults. It's just like, doesn't sound like a real thing that exists. It sounds like some card thing a 11-year-old would make up. But yeah, there's a couple of identical Puerto Rican identical twins that look like Abdullah the Butcher and do moonsaults. And this is them stabbing each other head with pieces of glass. I wouldn't say it's great, but it's really great. Like, it's like more of, it's like,
I would love to watch it, it's definitely
more of a vibe than like an amazing wrestling match, but it's a vibe, man. Those guys are nuts, and the crowd gets really into Headhunter B and just starts chanting B, which is pretty funny.
B, 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 B.
Yeah. Not like you can't tell these fucking two guys apart. They look exactly the same. I don't know how you pick which one of them you're gonna be rooting for. But yeah, well, I think it was A or B. One of them's got a really, really great looking Alabama jail. Like crazy height for like 400-pound dudes.
Yeah, that's what I remember about the Headhunters, watching like the music videos, like the early YouTube music videos. Their moonsaults were insane for 400-pound guys. They were like,
they're really music video wrestlers. It's like, oh my god, these music videos are incredible. You watch a match, and oh, this is one of better.
Not great.
I mean, they're fine. I like the editors, but they're guys who you know, they're the six coolest things they do in the match are really cool. And you're still going to get a lot. I mean, I don't know if you remember the Eliminators from ECW were a lot like that. Or did you
Barry
put them
Shatter
on
and John Cronus?
Yeah, you put some Eliminators highlights on some Alice in Chains or something like that. You're like, holy shit, these guys are the greatest fucking wrestler I've ever seen. And then you actually watch an Eliminators match, you're like, oh no, this is
Public Anime.
Yeah, Public. I mean, a lot of those ECW guys were like that. Where it's just like, yeah, but I mean, Rocco Rock was a good wrestler. He was a guy who, you know, he had like a weird pre-ECW run as the Cheetah Kid, working as a fake tiger mask on New Jersey Indies. He was good. He's fine. He did some European stuff too. He's a good wrestler. Johnny Grunge was okay. But yeah, Public Enemy were all like, I mean, a lot of ECW as a promotion for the most part, they had some really good wrestlers, but a lot of that stuff was like amazing video clips of stuff through Alice in Chains song and the matches itself.
Yeah.
I don't hold up. I've got a couple of these. I think I've got two or three ECW matches in the book, which I think may underrepresent them a little bit, but so be it. I got Stairway to
Taboo
Hell.
Sam, man. You got Taboo Funk. You had the obvious ones.
Yeah, I think Tajiri Carino's in there. There's a little bit of a later ECW deal.
Yeah. You have Gangsta's Thugs from Smoky Mountain, which is like a heated match.
Yes, it's like a.
That's a very heater.
It's basically wrestling as a. It's a World Star video. It's a wrestling match. Basically, it looks like a fight outside a Waffle House in Kentucky or something like that. And you know the gangsters. You know that was, you know that doesn't age amazingly. That's some of that stuff.
Oh no,
but some of the stuff really does. Like in a way, like New Jack was a really compelling performer in a lot of ways, especially during that period. And, you know, there's something to be said for professional wrestling that gets emotional reaction from fans, even if the emotional reaction is racist and violent, but at least it's an emotional reaction. At least the fans are, you know, involved in what's going on in a real visceral way, as opposed to, you know, a lot, you know, in wrestling now, you don't have that kind of emotional reaction anymore.
You have the same number of IWA Mid-South matches and DCW matches in.
Accurate. That's an accurate representation of the quality of those two promotions. I could have easily put on five more. I think I'm going to add more. How many IWA Mid-South matches do I have there? I have at least three, right?
Necro Butcher Joe.
I have four, right? I got Necro Butcher Joe here, and I have had three ECW matches, or do I only have two?
In Rotten Hero,
that match is incredible. I did a whole zine with
Butcher
my friend.
Joe.
I did a
Eddie
whole
zine. Hero, Jimmy Jacobs, BJ. Oh, Low-Key Hero.
Low-Key Hero is PWG.
Oh, Low-Key Hero is PWG. All those guys wrestled for so many promotions.
Sure. That whole period was
a blob.
It was a little bit of a blob. But yeah, no, I didn't Mid-South. I gotta remember that was a promotion that ran like once a week. Like they weren't running like once a month. They were running like every week bringing in people. And, you know, they had a base of really, really great wrestlers. And that Ian Rotten Hero match was there. Me and my buddy J.L. Goldberg did an entire zine, which I think you can still get from him. All about this Meth Lab Battle Arts is what I coined, which was this period of IBA Mid-South Ian Rotten matches that were all, Rotten's got people who've heard of Ian Rotten and they think of him as a wrestler, think of him as a guy doing like hitting people with glass, light tubes and that kind of thing, right? Which is what he did a lot of. But he's also a guy who was like an incredibly skilled grappler and he would work these matches. The match with Hiro is all really violent mat wrestling. Like all on the mat, all like where you could just, you know, there's like in front of like 27 people and you could hear like the impact of like Ian Rotten punching Chris Hiro on like the elbow as hard as he could and like putting on these like submissions where you can hear tendon stretch. It's actually harder to watch than any Ian Rotten deathmatch because it just the violence. I mean, like, and the crowd, it's one of the great things about having a crowd that silent is they're just kind of like disgust. You just hear them go like, oh my God. You're like, hey, people have that reaction to like this match.
People are like, Jesus. People are like, fucking Christ, shit.
And this is it's an IWA Mid-South show, right? They're there to see people get hit in the face with bottles and shit. But you're just watching Ian Rotten take his knuckle and drive into the side of Chris Hero's temple. They're like, oh, this is, I don't know. I came here to watch Mean Mick Page get stabbed with glass. I don't have my stomach for this match. It's just like, so it's worth watching. I mean, all that Ian hard mat wrestling shit is incredible. Nobody really thinks about that. Nobody really thinks about Ian particularly rates Ian as a wrestler, and nobody really ever talks about those matches. But that little subset of where Ian takes a guy and sugar holds him and punches him in the side of his neck, I mean, it is great. And that Hiro match is incredible. And all those IWA Mid-South matches are. That means Joe Necro is famous. Is
fucking incredible. Joe Necro is 10 minutes of,
six minutes. I mean, it's not even 10. It's really short. But yeah, it's like, and then the atmosphere of like, what am I watching?
The ECW arena just buzzing. It's just, This is what ECW was.
I mean, it's maybe the greatest match in the history of the ECW arena. I'll go ahead and hot take it. I think that may be the greatest match in the history of the ECW arena. I don't know what some other candidates. I mean, it's incredible. And, you know, it's got this real moment, like right before, this is like that period where Necro, but it didn't last very long because his body fell apart. I don't think he's a guy who, outside of the style of wrestling, which isn't something that encourages longevity. And I don't think his non-wrestling lifestyle was one that encouraged longevity.
Oh no.
So he's not somebody who, you know, had a long career, but man, it's like during that period, like right around that match, and then there's some matches against Loki and some matches, you know, with PWG, Eddie Kingston matches where he was on this run where it's like everything he touched
was incredible. Gold.
Incredible. So there's a Super Dragon match. There's a match of Super Dragon and PWG. I don't know if you've ever seen that. Where it's just
I've seen the Necro Super Dragon match. That match is incredible.
Doesn't have blood is the only reason it's not in this book. I mean, I think there's a chance Super Dragon was bleeding underneath his mask. But they didn't have visible blood, so it doesn't, like, you know, that was the thing.
I needed
to see a little red to write about it in this book. Otherwise, I would have definitely written about that. Other things, like that Hiro Kingston match, which is a, you know, the Hiro Kingston and Whitmer Jacobs, those are both sort of big time 2000s indie wrestling feuds. Those guys, you know, that went, you know, and those I think are both the both the best versions of that feud happened at IWA Mid-South. So, and weird too, because the Hiro Kingston match wasn't, I mean, they had a couple of losers, they had a big loser leaves town match in CZW, which is very good. They ran the feud back again in ROH and ran a loser leaves town. Big matches and big promotions. This was like just a sort of a thrown together match on a second night of a Ted Petty Invitational tournament where both guys have been eliminated in the first round. So they said, fuck it, we'll just run Hiro Kingston, you know, as an extra match on the second night of this tournament. I don't know if Ian flew anybody in. That doesn't seem right, but whatever, they're here. So we'll just run this match.
We'll fly anybody in.
He may have said that he was going to pay the ticket. I don't know. I mean, you know, who knows in the internet? You know, God bless. It's wrestling.
God bless. God bless you.
But so that was that match. This wasn't like a hyped match, you know, with a lot of build to it, but it had the build of course, these guys feuding for years and years and years, and they were just, and they just obliterated each other with that thing. And then Jacobs Whitmer, obviously this big feud in ROH. I don't know if this is something you're familiar with, where Jacobs, you know, it was they were a tag team and they broke up, and Jacobs had this unrequited love affair with Lacey, their manager, which really is not some that you want to talk about things that don't age well when you rewatch them. I rewatched all that the Jacobs Lacey stuff. I mean, he comes off like he's a, I don't know if he's as a baby face incel psychopath is a weird gimmick. I guess it's a perfect gimmick for ROH fans, but that was basically what he was working. And so in hindsight, you're like, oh no, this guy's gonna try to stab up, bring a knife into a sorority house. That's how it feels when you're watching it again. But so that was that part of this feud. But this wasn't really part of that feud. This was a couple of months after the blow off in ROH. And again, sort of a side thing in IW Mid-South. But I think it was the match that they had with each other that brought it all together. It was like an I Quit match. Good Lord.
That I Quit match was actually, I've seen the I Quit match. That's brutal.
Yeah. I mean, the finish, you know, spoiler alert, everybody should watch the match. I mean, the finish is basically Jacobs giving a vasectomy to Whitmer in the middle of the ring with a spike. That's the end of it. He's like, I'm gonna stick this Kevin Sullivan spike right in this guy's urethra four times until he quits. And that's the thing. You know, the thing about I Quit matches is sometimes you gotta. That's a big thing to sort of pull off, is trying to make sure that you buy the I Quit. I think in the war games that I did, there are four war games in this book. And I think three of the I Quits were good. I think that's the one sort of flaw in the 92 War Games, which otherwise is pretty close to a perfect match, is that's not a great finish. The Sting Swanson versus Danger, it's Alliance finish of that War Games is not great. It's like they do this whole thing where they're unhooking a hook from the ring post for 2 minutes, and then Zbyszko accidentally hits Bobby Eaton in the arm with it, and then Sting submits him with an famous master of the armbar. Sting submits him with an armbar.
Isn't it funny how the indie war games are better than the actual WCW war games?
Some of the WCW war games are really good. The two Wildside war games are incredible. You know, the two Anarchy one, the RHCW one is really good. I've watched a lot of indie war games. I went on a little bit of a indie war games deep dive. There are plenty that are not great.
Oh, okay.
It's not a universal thing.
Indie war game. This is good.
I mean, they're all better. They're all better than those NXT war games for the most part, because they're not like, you know, those WCW ones. I mean, all of the ones that we have from that first run, like Horseman versus Superpowers and Road Warriors, those are all incredible. And the 91 one where Brian Pillman gets dropped on his head by Sid is really good. The 94 War
Games. Oh, yeah, the 94 one's really underrated because it didn't have blood.
So it was which is the issue with it. He's not in this book. But outside of that match is incredible. Those are my dudes, man. Dustin and Arn and the Stud Stable.
If the 94 one had blood, it would be on this list.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It might, if it had blood, it might be the best one ever. I think blood's got to knock it. You know, blood's got to knock it down a little bit, but outside of that, man, that match is perfect. Because, you know, it's got the whole Dusty's rep, you know, his family, and you know, the emotional Dusty Rhodes connection with the fans is really great. That match is so good. Not in the book though. Can't read about it in the book. No cool Chris Bryan drawing of it in the book. Very good. But yes, both those
drawings in the book are incredible.
Yeah, Chris is so talented. And I'm so lucky to have him do that. And I really think that's like the thing. I mean, that I think really is. I mean, my writing's fine. I make some jokes. I tell you about some cool matches. It's great. I'm sure. But you want to get that book for Chris's art. I mean, it's 100 individual new illustrations. And every one of them could be like a poster on your wall. Like, it's almost worth getting as an art book. You ignore what I say about any of this stuff. So even if you're somebody who's always hated me, the book's worth getting just for the art.
It's 101 because the cover is great.
Ah, the cover is great as well, yes.
What else can we talk about? Jushin Liger, Naoki Sano. That's always fun.
That's a great match. That was a really great feud between those two guys.
Yeah.
Sort of the end of that. And, you know, that style of wrestling is not something that when I've come back to, is really connected with me, particularly a lot of the Liger stuff I've seen. It's hard not to love Liger, but like a lot of that New Japan Juniors stuff, when I've rewatched it recently, hasn't connected with me in the same way as it did when I was watching it, you know, when it was happening, right? I mean, like I said, I was getting wrestling videotapes from the Japanese video store by my house in like 1993 and 1994 and 1995, 96, right? And, you know, at some point back in the DVD-VR days, Dean was getting videotapes from a buddy of his in Japan who would just send it to everyone. So we would just get a videotape once every couple weeks of just all this Japanese TV from this 90s period, all Japan. This is obviously before YouTube or any way that you could get the stuff easily, but we would have tapes. So this is all stuff, a lot of that stuff in the 90s I was watching concurrently as it's happening. And you would get like that, the thing you would be excited about was the Liger match or the Otani match or the Ultimo Dragon match. But when we watch a lot of stuff, it's just like, it doesn't connect with me the same way. This match is an exception. This connects with me in a way that those matches don't, because it really isn't about, you know, cool moves. It's about, you know, two guys trying to fucking massacre each other, which is what you want to see. I mean, it's like now when I watch War, it's like I want to watch Chandler. I want to watch Takeshi Ishikawa. I want to watch Hara. I don't want to particularly want to watch it. If I never watch another Ultimo Dragon match in my life, it'll be fine. I'll live a happy life, never seeing another one. Throw too much shade in Ultimo, but you have zero interest in that kind of stuff anymore. And a lot of Ligers like that too, but not this. This is great. And those guys are, and Sano is one of those guys who had this really.
Liger has that versatility that a lot of his contemporaries.
Yeah. And Sano is a guy who had this great, really, really cool, sort of like almost like a great character actor. When you look back at his IMDb, it's like, man, that guy has a lot of good fucking movies. And, you know, and Sano was like that, where he had this run and then had like the run in SWS, which was cool. And it's like he had some fun matches against weird dudes then, and they worked like some shoot style stuff and was in UWFI and Battle Arts, and then kind of a run in Noah where he put on some weight, was a little tubbier, and would just like spin kick people in the stomach. And this is a guy who, like, a guy of, you know, like if you look back on, you did 20 cool Asano matches, maybe a lot of really cool fucking matches. But not a guy who really has that same sort of rep as, oh, this guy was, he doesn't have that same rep as your other 90s juniors guys, right? He's not in the same conversation usually as guys like Ultimo Dragon or Rey Mysterio or Malenko or Guerrero or even guys like El Samurai, right? Which or Suzuki. I mean, there's so many really Kaya 90s Japanese juniors wrestlers. And you don't really talk about Sano that way, but they kind of should.
I found it interesting that there was only one blood match from All Japan because there was only one blood match in All Japan.
Well, from that period, there's three All Japan matches in there total, right? Because I've got a Funk Sheik Abby, and then I've got I think it's a Saito. But Saito Masafuchi is on there too. From that period, yeah, there wasn't a lot of blood in that period. They had this, and so you know, Kawada, Taui, Masao, those guys didn't really bleed. Every once in a while, they might have a little bloody nose on them. I could have found a match there. This is Taui Kawada, this is them having their bloody brawl. This is like if this feud had a Texas death match, it would be this, which is really cool. Yeah, I would have Killer Carl Cox, Murdoch from All Japan. So this All Japan stuff that was earlier. But yeah, that 90s stuff, there was no blade there. But still good. I mean, in some ways, like, you know, the people who sort of looked down on bloody wrestling, oh, you know, All Japan, they didn't have a blade. So yeah, they were also just, you know, it was a lot safer. Probably some of them, Misawa took five less suplexes on his neck in a match and just cut his eyebrow a little bit. I mean, it might have ended up differently. I mean, that was such a violent style that, you know, they could have probably used some shortcuts and some BS and cut down a little bit, especially near the end of All Japan, where it really got a little out of control with the
suplexes. Great.
Yeah, and I was fine with not having a lot to write about All Japan. I mean, those matches, that sort of period, that mid-90s All Japan stuff, that's been written about plenty, right? That has been overanalyzed and over-talked about. And, you know, those guys, there's nothing really new to say about
Cole. No, there's not.
It's a little bit like I'm writing a, you know what, I'm writing a musical. I mean, I think I'm going to write about Bob Dylan. Has anybody ever written a book about Bob Dylan? It's like that. Right, yeah, it's like there's that's a covered category. If you want to, you know, there's less. If you want to try to, there's, you know, Credence doesn't have that many books about that. I'm going to find the Credence a little more than I'm going to find Bob Dylan, as much as I love Bob Dylan, as much as I, you know, love that 90s All Japan stuff. But it's, again, sort of a thing that I, in some sense, you know, it's not something I have a lot of time for now. It's not something we've watched a bunch of the, found some cool handhelds that weren't really out there. So I've watched some handheld stuff of those guys, imagine that weren't sort of, you know, on TV that are kind of cool, but I haven't gone back and rewatched, you know, the, you know, big
90s.
Yeah. The famous date matches in a while. And which is, I'm okay with, right? Like, it's
I'll go back and watch it then.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think it's a little bit of an age thing, right? Like, you know, this was, yeah. I watched the big 94 match, that shit showed up on my video store in 94. And so I was in the midst of this being the canonical best wrestling ever. When it was sort of being discussed as that. And so, you know, at this point, I just don't have a lot more to say or a lot more interested in revisiting. I probably, what happened to Misawa did a little of that to me too, which is stuff harder to watch now. You know what I mean?
Especially after what Misawa did.
What happened to himself? You watched it escalate. You know, we watched it escalate in real time when it was going on, right? You watched them go from one insane suplex on the neck at the end of a match to one happens in 6 minutes in and means nothing. And you watch it kind of, you know, you keep the, you know, the chasing the bigger high. It's like they went from, they'd snort a little heroin at a party, you know, at some point by the late 90s, they were full on, you know, track marks up and down their arms kind of thing. And at that point, you just kind of, you sort of realized what was going on. And then obviously you saw the consequences of it. And it got the earlier stuff, the memories of the party in 94 are a little tainted by the overdose in 99, 2000, 2001. You know what I mean? But which is, you know, funny about a match that's got, you know, some absolutely gross stuff. This book's got some gross stuff in it.
Oh, this book had some gross.
So, you know, who am I to get up on my moral high horse and talk about the inevitable damage of this, where I've got like a CZW match where Danny Havoc gets thrown through 15 plates of glass off a scaffold. You know, I'm like, all right, yeah, sure. You know, it is what it is, right? Or, you know, Zona 23 dudes getting thrown through windshields.
Yeah. Plugs for yourself.
Do some plugs? Okay. Well, the book, Way of the Blade, is available now on Amazon. So if you are listening to this podcast and have not picked it up, please go and buy it. I think that you will, it's got a lot in there to really like. I think you'll discover some stuff you haven't seen. My DMs are open on Twitter, by the way, if anybody gets the book and wants me to sort of Sherpa them to a match that may be hard to find. So anybody who's listening to this and like gets a copy of the book and says, you know what, where the hell can I find this Black Terry six-man from IWRG? Holler at your boy. I'll make sure you get your hands on a copy of it. The Way of the Blade podcast is available on every podcast server except Apple for some reason, because Apple's podcasts, they did an update and they fucked their entire system up. And they keep, and the people from Apple support continue not to respond to my emails. So right now it's not on Apple, but it's on every other way you get podcasts. And you know, and we link to, you know, Red Circle, the direct links are on Twitter. Every Thursday there's a new one of those out. And like I said, I got already out now as a big talk about the two-parter on the War Games is a lot of fun, and Jeff G. Bailey and Dan Wilson are such legendary, such wrestling characters in some ways.
Listen, yeah, guys,
yeah, bullshit been on and tell stories podcast about that whole period. It's really cool. The Daniel Cotton. I mean, all four of the, I'm really happy the way all four of those podcasts go up. And I'm going to do a new one every week for a while. I've got some that are already recorded. I've got some guests lined up. Like I said, the one, not this Thursday, but next Thursday, is an enormous guest that I'm not going to leak now, but, you know, one of the biggest figures in professional wrestling right now. And we're going to talk about some stuff. So that should be really cool. So, and then segundacaeda.blogspot.com. Like, I've been doing that now for, 14, 15 years, every day, rain or shine, there is a new post up about something. And every Tuesday we've been doing the French catch stuff that we talked about earlier. So people should catch up on that. I mean, so many cool matches. When we just, if every Friday we do new footage Friday, where we dig through all of the, you know, find something that hadn't really been out there in the world before and write about that. And that's really cool. And just, whole bunch of other stuff. That's what I'm doing. But if you buy the book, because I got two kids and I have to buy new Target shoes for my son every 3 weeks as his feet get bigger. That shit adds up.
That shit does add up. DJ D Groups on Twitter, Social Suplex on Twitter, and socialsuplex.com is where you can find this podcast, and you find us on all podcast providers. Podcast network.
Apple too. Apple works for you.
I think Apple works for us, but but I don't even know if Apple works for us right now because Apple fucked with their podcasts.
They fucked with their podcasts. I've stopped using them to listen to podcasts, as a response to them screwing up my podcast. Like, fine, I'm deleting your goddamn podcast player from my iPhone. Just loading up Spotify. Where you can find the Way of the Blade podcast with no problem at all.
So. Oh, I have found the Way of the Blade podcast on Spotify with no problem. I listened to the first two episodes with no problemo.
No, go listen to the Wildside ones, man. And have you did you watch those War Games matches?
I haven't.
You got to follow me. I posted links to both matches on Twitter.
Okay.
Those two Wildside War Games matches are both awesome and so much fun. And my advice is you could watch them both, and then you can listen to the sort of story behind all of them. I mean, the cool one about the 2006 one, I think, is as good as any. I think what we do sort of an all-time match of the year list on Segunda Caeda, where we have a different match, a list of what we think the best match of every year is. It's our 2006 match of the year. We think it's so far. I mean, we will, we haven't watched all the matches from 2006. Right now, we have it as the best match in 2006. It's arguably one of the 10 best independent wrestling matches of all time. It's just incredible. 2007 match is a step below that, but also very cool. And also really cool because it's completely heel versus heel, which is something that I don't think you see very much in War Games. It's this group of evil psychopaths need to come in and take care of this group of evil psychopaths. So it's a lot of it's which is a fun stuff. And the Jeff G. Bailey and Reverend Dan podcast, which I'm currently editing and should have out tonight or tomorrow morning, just them telling all the different stories about how this whole feud was put together, and all the is really fun. You can listen to those guys, talk. I can listen to those guys talk shit forever. So,
yeah. And thank you guys for listening.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.